speaker is Rolf Sommer from the International Center for Tropical Agriculture, presenting work from Western Kenya.
Good afternoon, everybody. First of all, let me thank you for having me here, and I would also like to congratulate Veronica. You have managed to get an incredibly diverse set of lectures together. You already mentioned I work for the International Center for Tropical Agriculture. This is one of the 15 CGIAR centers. The CIAD's headquarters is in Colombia, in Cali, but we have a big office also in Nairobi. That's where I'm based. If you have more questions about CIAD, don't hesitate to ask Chuck Rice, who is the member of the board of the CIAD. Two more comments. I found it quite a coincidence that Richard Dick was mentioning Fred Kisitu, who is a very dear colleague of mine working now for CIAD. And the second comment, it's very unfortunate to talk about lessons from long-term trials after somebody talking about Rothamsted. I'm afraid it's not 150 years, but we'll see. Let me also acknowledge my co-authors. This is Job Kihara, John Mukalama, Birte Paul, and Saidu Koala. These are all CIAD scientists. So what is the rationale of our long-term trials? We first want to delineate, test, and fine-tune what we call smart cropping systems for tropical agriculture. You may have heard the climate smart systems. We are talking about smart in a bit more general terms. And that comprises issues of sustainable intensification, increase nutrient water use efficiency, soil protection, and also maintaining or increasing soil fertility. We wanted to test in one of the trials, components of conservation agriculture, and I will talk about this in a minute, compare different type of crop rotations. And when these trials started, that was the time also when the so-called integrated soil fertility management was quite strongly advocated by TSBF, which is the institute that now has turned into the CIAD Soil Program. It's the second trial that I'm going to talk to you about is also a little bit about how we can best work towards crop livestock integration. And then, of course, this is also showcasing some of the things. And I should mention one person in particular. This is John Mukalama, and he is definitely the person in charge of these trials for the last 10, 11 years. And without him, there would not be these trials. And of course, long-term trials, the idea is to show all of this long-term. So we have two experiments that I'm going to talk about. This is now Western Kenya, East Africa. We have one that we call the CT1, conservation, focusing on conservation tillage. And then there's the second one on integrated soil fertility management, which for whatever reasons, I really don't know, is called INM3. So there must have been INM 1, 2, but this is now INM 3. Sometimes you wonder how these names or these acronyms came all about. The first trial it was implemented 2003, so that means 12 years ago. The second one, 11 years ago. And they are all split plot designs with three major treatments. The first one for CT1 is tillage. Second one, maize stover residue retention, plus or minus. The third one is then testing these crop rotations aliased with various levels of NNP fertilizer application. INM3 is a bit similar, but in the first place, focusing on the application of farmyard manure. And this is, again, applying farmyard manure, 4 tons or not. And the second and third are similar to what we also have implemented in CT1. One important feature of INM3 is that we are testing a rotation with Tifrosia candida, which is a perennial legume. It's actually in Kenya, they call it fish wheat because it's a poisonous plant, and you can take the leaves and throw it in a pond that would kill fish, which I don't advise you to do, but that's where the name came all about. And I find it a quite interesting green manure cover crop for a range of reasons, and I'm going to show you a few aspects. So we are here in East Africa. You can see Lake Victoria. This is now Western Kenya, down here Tanzania, here Uganda, again Lake Victoria. We are north of the city of Kisumu, which is the third largest city of Kenya. This is INM3, and so you can see INM3 here and CT1 here. You can also see these tiny little fields, patches of tiny little fields. And this is then how it looks like INM3. You can see here the plot, and what is left green is indeed the Tephrosia, which has not yet been harvested on that satellite photo. And then CT1 located here. The environment, we are at about 1,300 meters above sea level. These are humid tropical climate. We have two cropping seasons, a long rainy season and a short rainy season. The average rainfall is about 1,700 millimeters. The soils are acric ferrous soils, high in clay, low cation exchange capacity, low to moderate pH. These are highly P-fixing soils, and the topsoil organic matter is around 34 grams per kilogram. There's a photo here of a student. We had the pleasure to have a PhD student through the Borlaug program last year. This is Nick Jelinski, and he was the first professional soil judging person coming and judging these soils, and who also then came up with all these characteristics. So I want to focus a little bit on INM3, which is the long-term trial with Tephrosia rotation, but I also wanted to give you a few insights about the CT1, which is focusing on the conservation tillage. First of all, the impact of zero tillage direct season. We can say after 12 years, the performance of these systems is as good as the conventional systems only if residues are retained. We have a severe yield penalty for the zero tillage residue removed treatments, and you can see here how that looks like when residues are removed. We know that we have evidence that soil physical quality, aggregate stability, size distribution improves under zero tillage with residues retained. In terms of crop residue retention, residues disappear at a very fast rate. This graph is from Job Kihara, published in 2009, where he shows that within 100 days, the residues either buried or above ground disappear to about 20%. I don't want to go into the details of the excluded or included. We can talk about this later. And the issue here is termites. So we had my colleague Birte Paul, she published this paper just this year, and that entailed a quite severe discussion about the benefits or the problems we have with termites. So basically we could find out that if termites are excluded, we can improve yields. But the question is, if termites are in the system, where does these residues end up? And that's a debate that has not been finished. So if you are a termite expert and you would like to work on this, you're more than welcome to come and help us out on that. After all, the Western Kenya smallholder systems, they are crop livestock systems. Almost all farmers have livestock. And so we can also say that it's for farmers it's not profitable to retain residues because there's a high competition for livestock feed. This is how it looks like when you leave residues. You can see clearly here the impact of termites. They are burying these residues, and within no time they are all gone. Some selected results for INM3. The Tephrosia, when I came to see it, I didn't know nothing about Tephrosia, but when I saw these results, I was really impressed. We are getting in each season about 7 tons of dry matter biomass. These are up to 3.5 meter tall crops, and we are getting a biological nitrogen fixation of around 90 to 122 kilograms, so that's quite significant. In terms of N balance, I studied these systems. We ran some crop models long-term, looking into the N dynamics, uptakes versus inputs. And we can say that all the continuous maize monocropping systems, all of them have a negative N balance unless manure was applied. On the other hand, all the Tephrosia maize rotations had a positive N balance. However, what we could also find out is that the Tephrosia maize, and if farmyard manure was applied, had significantly higher nitrous oxide emissions. And I made a graph here on the right-hand side plotting N2O emissions against N inputs. I'm not going to talk about the soybean rotation. I just wanted to mention soybean, that we also have some humble yields of half a ton. And there's some humble net input of nitrogen through BNF in these systems. This is just a quick graph. We have now four seasons in a row nitrous oxide emissions studied. And you can see, without going into the details, the red line is the one where we have farmyard manure applied and the Tephrosia maize rotation. So this is the one that is significantly sticking out in terms of nitrous oxide emissions. I wanted to highlight a few more maize yields, because maize is by far the most dominant and most important crop in this system, and also for smallholders. It's a staple crop, and it's the one that sustains food security. These are the FAO maize yields for Kenya from 1960 onwards until 2013, the last data. And you can see these yields have never really surpassed 2 tons, and we can even see a slight negative trend here. And that's actually quite, when I show this working for the CGIAR Center, and we have a sister center, CIMIT, that works on maize improvement, that happened to enter Africa exactly in 1982, then you wonder what's wrong with the system. Why can't we make an impact? Why is there even a slight negative impact? But keep that graph in mind and keep that downward slope, and I want to offer you one explanation later on. So coming back to INM3, the one where we had the first level farmyard manure application, and clearly we can see a positive, significant impact of farmyard manure application on maize grain yields. The second level maize stover retention or removal, 2 tons retained, has no significant impact on the yields. However, here what we see, we have a significant interaction effect. So on the right-hand side, if we apply farmyard manure, residue retention has no further impact, but if we don't apply farmyard manure, then residue retention has a humble impact. And given that these are only 2 tons, and you get some 300-400 kilograms of increased maize yield, that's at least something we should keep in mind. Very quickly, this is now a bit comprehensive figure. So you see here on the left-hand side, this is the one with all the yields with minus farmyard manure. On the right-hand side is plus farmyard manure. Then we have minus residues, plus residues, minus residues, plus residues, and then the different rotations. We have intercropping, which is maize-soybean intercropped. We have maize-maize, that means maize-monocropped. Then we have maize-tephrosia here. And first of all, we can clearly see the very positive impact of, I don't know, can you see it on my screen? So we have here a very significant impact of pea fertilizer application. So we have here from no application of pea fertilizer up to 60 kilograms of elemental pea, we get at least a doubling of yields. Not so much if farmyard manure is applied as expected. We also see that the end fertilizer application above 30 kilograms has no significant impact, and that's something I found quite astonishing. And we are looking into this, but there are various ideas we are following up. One of it was we thought it's probably the impact of the low soy pH and maybe aluminum toxicity. That's why we made a few changes to the long-term trials. And I'm really happy that you said changes are possible. I was holding my breath. What if he says no changes in long-term trials? And so we made a few changes beginning of this year. We have The intercropping, that's a bit difficult to see, but the intercropping and the monocropping maize yields at this no nitrogen level are the same. There's no difference. And that's basically a very easy explanation why most of the systems that we work in Kenya, also Tanzania, Uganda, are almost all the smallholders practice intercropping with combining two or even three crops, because you can see it's just beneficial. And that's not even including now the soybean additional yields of half a ton that would have to be added on top. Then we have now here, these are the maize monocropping yields. These are the Tephrosia maize yields. And we can see that the Tephrosia maize rotation has a positive impact on yields. And that's something we should look into. So we have these Tephrosia maize long-term trends, and you can see the blue line here. Clearly, Tephrosia maize, the maize yield under Tephrosia maize rotation is higher. But the problem here is we are sacrificing 50% of the land to grow Tephrosia. So that means you would have to divide these yields by two because you only have half the area available. And that's how the picture looks like when we divide by two. And the beauty here is to see that the first 6 to 8 years, we don't see any. We can see that the monocropping is kind of outperforming the rotation. But now during the last years, we can see that the monocropping is the yields are decreasing. And I have this also here with the heading trends are more important than averages. And this is the downward trend, even if we apply 90 kilograms of nitrogen fertilizer, 60 kilograms of elemental P, and also 60 kilograms of potassium. And on the other hand, we have this upward trend if we go into a rotation with Tephrosia. So coming back to that figure about the country yields of Kenya, and I assume that's one of the reasons why we are seeing a downward, somewhat of a downward trend of yields in Kenya is the missing inputs of organic matter and the reliance on mineral fertilizer only, if at all. So we made some changes to the long-term trials beginning of this year. We sacrificed the food treatments and added lime and also a few multinutrients. We reduced the pea fertilizer application rate from 60 to 45 kilograms because we thought 60 is way too high, or that's what I thought. No more nitrogen to Tephrosia because we didn't see any impact of adding nitrogen to a legume. And then, coming back to that problem, if you sacrifice half of your land for Tephrosia, how can we do better? And we said, well, why don't we make it, instead of a Tephrosia maize rotation, why don't we make it a Tephrosia maize Tephrosia rotation? And I'm running a bit out of time, so that's why I wanted to show you where we are now. Spreading the residues that are produced here on a Tephrosia crop, we are spreading it in the next season over two crops. So we have, instead of having a Tephrosia every other season, we only have it every third season. So very quickly, we have some significant positive liming effect in the maize-soybean intercropping treatment, but we don't see that in the maize-Tephrosia rotation. We even have a slight negative impact of liming when there's no manure and no residues applied. So my last slide, so the title was about lessons learned. So what do we learn? And I think the previous speaker already mentioned it. Without organic matter management input retention in these tropical systems, it's not going to work. We must have these organic matter management, which also means the integrated soil fertility management practice, which focuses on these organic matter combined with mineral fertilizer. This is a proof for the success of this practice. Zero tillage with crop residue retained is as good as conventional, but not any better. Crop residues retention has benefits for soil health, but competition for residues in crop lysis systems is huge. And that's also why farmers would not adopt the residue retention. But on the other hand, in these crop livestock systems, we have manure or alternatively compost that could be a viable alternative, and the trial shows this quite clearly. The non-edible green manure cover crops like Tephrosia is not attractive. Farmers don't like it. The Kenyan farmers or the East African farmers, if you have a legume where you which you neither can eat yourself nor can feed to your livestock, it's something where we have an attractiveness issue. We must still think about smarter systems, such as what I showed you, changing rotations, or we could even think about CA systems that include Diprosia. We are still have work to do to make these integrated soil fertility management climate smart in a way. How do we address these nitrous oxide emissions? Thank you very much, and I said if you are interested in collaboration, you're more than welcome. We are always happy to host students and to look into further details. We are a bit overwhelmed by these trials, and unfortunately we don't have the resources like Rothenstedt. So if you're interested, I'd be more than happy to host a student or start a collaboration. Thanks a lot.